Hello, everybody, and welcome again to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and each week we, of course, explore UFOs and the paranormal. And tonight, I have a very exciting guest. His name is Kevin Cannon, and he's going to tell us about his really very interesting onboard experience, onboard UFO experience, in which he saw very, very large, actually, praying mantis-type ETs. But before I get into that and introduce our guest, let me just tell you a little bit of the UFO news that's going on, because definitely things are going on. It's a very, very interesting time for UFO investigations, because it just seems to be very active. Just recently, Professor Arlen Krotz of Columbia University has written a study about transient lunar phenomena. Now, transient lunar phenomena, TLP, is basically lights on the moon and various markings that appear and disappear, which have sort of defied explanation for years. And they've been seen for centuries, recorded by very prominent astronomers, including Herschel and others. But according to Professor Arlen Krotz, he has sort of patterned a lot of these cases of TLP and says that they correlate with what are known radon outgassing locations. Now, radon is, of course, a gas which is apparently lighting up. The problem with his theory, he's trying to prove that it's a natural phenomena. The problem is the TLP appear in geometric patterns, including crosses and triangles, circles, straight lines. So clearly, this is not a natural phenomena. And, of course, there's a great deal of controversy about structures on the moon. So the story of the moon, of course, is not over yet. That's going to be fully revealed one day, I believe. But until then, we will see. But let's get into some interesting crop circle news, actually. There's a recent crop circle event in Asheville, North Carolina. This was in the last week of May, when a 100-foot wide series of interlocking circles appeared in a hay field outside of West Asheville. Now, Rick Hawkins lives near the area. He's 28 years old, and he believes UFOs did it because he actually saw bright lights hovering over the field on the night before these crop circles appeared. And he assumed it was a plane or something, but after seeing the crop circles, he wonders. The police have investigated it, but have had no reports of anyone claiming to have caused this, and it's still under investigation, so it's not sure yet whether or not this is an actual crop circle or not, because scientists are actually able to prove whether crop circles are man-made or not. And a good case in point is another crop circle that just recently appeared. This was in, mid-June, and this is in Monroe County in Tennessee. And this is actually a very large crop circle. It's 170 feet across. It's got four circles, and actually five major circles, one in the center, four on each side, with circles in between those. And it's actually a really complicated circle, but looks very much like a Celtic cross. But what's interesting about this is it's been studied by Jeff Wilson, the Cincinnati, Ohio-based director of the Independent Crop Circle Research Association. And he's found that the nodes of the wheat, which were microscopically analyzed, are found to show unnatural elongation and evidence of expulsion cavities, which is not created by natural means, but is reproducible through the application of heat, such as might be produced by microwaves. So this is actually apparently a legitimate crop circle, and it's very exciting news. To date, there have been more than 10,000 crop circles cataloged around the world, and no one still knows how they're formed. So they're still going on. And here's another interesting UFO sighting. This occurred on May 11th at 10:40 p.m., in, Massillon, Ohio. Two barmaids were outside back of the lodge where they worked when they looked to the west and saw an object traveling about 60 to 70 feet above them. That's very low. They said it was traveling about 15 to 20 miles per hour, and it was all lit up with white fluorescent-like lights, which lit up the whole underside, and they estimated it was approximately 50 to 60 feet in diameter. So, a lot of activity going on. I don't know what's going on, but it seems to me there's an escalation of activity. Here's another interesting bit of news about Germany. In the country Germany, the MNID Research Center recently did a survey asking 1,000 German citizens over the age of 14, whether or not they believed in UFOs. 4% of the population said they actually have seen a UFO, and 40% said that they believe. So the tides are slowly turning. I mean, people here in America, it's pretty much 50% people believe, and 50% don't. So I don't know, we'll see. And last week, I mentioned about a Bigfoot research project going on in Michigan. This was actually mentioned on Larry King, and I've got more information about this. This is actually, let me see, in Marquette County, and Matthew Moneymaker of the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, this is one of the biggest Bigfoot research organizations out there, is actually going to go to this Upper Peninsula in Michigan to search for the legendary Bigfoot. And they're hoping to interview witnesses and perhaps even have an encounter. And he says, Moneymaker says, that members of his organization have either glimpsed Bigfoot or gotten close enough to hear the creature in all but 3 of 30 expeditions in the United States and Canada. So these guys are serious about this. There is a Bigfoot out there, I believe. The evidence is very good for it. But let's get on to our guest tonight. This is just an amazing encounter. Not the kind of encounter you normally hear about. I've talked to a lot of people who've had onboard UFO experiences with various types of extraterrestrials, and I would say the most common type that people tell me about is the short, gray type, generally about 3 to 5 feet tall, with large, dark eyes, bald. Very familiar, I'm sure, to all of you listening out there. But that's not what we're going to talk about tonight. Tonight we're going to talk about a different type of ET, the praying mantis ET. And, of course, this is a call-in show, so if any of you out there want to call in, the number is 877-876-5227. If you'd like to ask any questions, feel free to call anytime. We'd love to hear from you. But we're going to talk about praying mantis-type ETs. Now, I've run across several cases of people who have reported this type of ET. One gentleman told me that he was on Catalina Island, actually, as a child, and he experienced a missing time incident. And later, as an adult, under hypnosis, he recalled being taken to what appeared to be an underground or underwater-type base. And this was not a UFO that he was taken to. There were rock walls. It was a large cavern-like area with primitive computer-like equipment. He described the computers as being very primitive and just almost looking fake, like a movie set. And he also said that the ETs he saw were not the gray types, but were rather more insectoid-looking, more like these praying mantis. He said they were very tall, like 8 feet, with the large eyes, and basically the description you hear a lot of this type. And another case involves a lady named Kim Carlsberg, who actually wrote a book about her experiences, Beyond My Wildest Dreams, an excellent book. And she also has had encounters with these praying mantis-type ETs, which she did not like, actually. Her encounters were not particularly benevolent. Another lady I spoke with, Lori Angeloni, she's actually part of a witness in one of my most recent books, The Coronado Island UFO Incident. And she has described encounters as well with these very large, tall, grasshopper-like, praying mantis-like ETs. The descriptions vary a little bit, but they appear to be the same species. The ones she saw were about 8 to 9 feet tall, and she's been encountering them her whole life. Another gentleman, Mike Evans, he has had also encounters with these very large praying mantis ETs. Now, our guest tonight, Kevin Kamen, also has had an encounter with these type of ETs, or actually a much larger type, as we'll find out. He was a medic on the USS San Bernardino back in the late 1970s and early 1980s, during which he saw UFOs at least twice and was actually taken on board. And it's a very interesting story, and I just want to let him tell the story himself, because he's our guest tonight. Kevin, thank you for coming on to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, sir.
Your story is amazing. I know it well. I've studied it, and I'm just really excited to actually hear it again. And I'm so excited that you've agreed to share it with other people, because, I mean, this is not your typical UFO story. I've talked to so many people who've been taken on board, and they're examined, and, you know, their clothes are removed. It's a very, you know, familiar story that
right.
doesn't vary a lot. But your story is a little bit different. So
yes, it is.
Without revealing, you know, the name of your friend who actually got you involved in this, tell us how this all began for you.
Okay, well, I was, as you mentioned, I was on board the USS San Bernardino. I was a hospital corpsman in the Navy. And one of my friends, who was in my division on my ship, he and I were having a conversation. Now, I'd been on this ship from August of 1978, and this happened right around, oh, I guess May or June of 1982, or it could have been a little bit later than that. We were on a Westpac. We were on the other side of the world, and we were two or three days out from whatever port we'd been in. It was either Korea or the Philippines or whatever, but we were two or three days out from any land out at sea. And trouble is, you don't exactly know where you're at because it all looks the same. You know, when you look from horizon to horizon, all you see is water.
Right.
And I didn't really pay attention to where we were at, but that's where we were, and we were two or three days out at sea. Anyway, one evening, he and I, and like I said, we've been friends for about 4 years. He was one of my first friends that I became friends with on the ship when I first got on board. And it was 4 years before we even got into a conversation. And he happened to come down to my space, which was the medical department, and we were sitting there, we were talking, and somehow or another the subject of UFOs came up. And he asked me if I believed in UFOs. And I told him that I did a book report on them in high school, and that all the stories that I had read and everything, there was a lot of similarities between all the stories and stuff. And I told him that I thought there had to be something to it. It couldn't be just all a hoax. I figured there had to be some credible thing to it, but little did I know, it's more true than I thought. So anyway, he told me that he had been on board UFOs quite a few times, and he had been abducted since he was 10 years old on a regular basis.
Wow.
And, of course, I'm kind of a little skeptical, you know. I was like, yeah, right, sure. So, anyway, I told him that I'd be interested. He told me that he could arrange for me to meet E.T. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, sure you can. Okay, sure. I want to meet your little green friends. That's what I told him. So he said, well, I'll talk to him to see what happens. So then a couple days later, he came back down to my space. And he told me that he had just got back for a little encounter with his friends. Now, we've been out to sea for 5 days now about this time, 4 or 5 days. And we had been nowhere near land or anything. And he told me he just got back from a little encounter with his friends, and he'd gone for a little ride. And I'm like, yeah, right, sure. You know, it's just because, you know, there was no reports of any flying saucers or anything coming around our ship or anything like that. So, of course, it was like, yeah, right.
Right.
And I didn't really want to believe him or not. But then I asked him where he went, and he told me he came from my house.
Hmm.
And I thought, okay, so then I said, well, what did you see? So he just started to describe things that he saw. One of the things he described was our 1966 Ford Galaxy 500 car that we had, bought, and gave quite a bit of details about it that was more than just what the average person would know. And the thing is, everything he said was as accurate as it could be, and I knew for a fact that what he was telling me was the truth. Except for one little problem. We had sold the car in 1970, and it was a 66 Ford Galaxy 500, and we had traded it in 1970 for a Plymouth 43, and then after the Plymouth 43, like in 1977, my dad got a different car, and so we're talking like three cars ago. We're talking ancient history.
So he's going back to the past.
So he was going back to the past.
Wow.
Right? But I was startled by what he said because he had a lot of details. And I said, well, what else did you see? So then he just started describing my house, the house that I had grown up in, which my parents weren't living in at the time. They had moved since then. But he was describing the house that I grew up in, right down to the detail of all the furniture and the color of the carpet and the wallpaper and the, and everything on the walls and in the kitchen and everything else. And he started describing my bedroom and all the things that were up on the bedroom. Now, I grew up in the 60s, and my parents were pretty liberal. They let us decorate our room, and we had posters in there, and we had day glow paint, and we wrote peace and love and wrote flowers and all kinds of things, you know, like the old hippies did back then, you know, on the walls in the bedroom and stuff.
Right.
And trouble was, if he had just come back from my house like he said he did, he wouldn't have known any of this because he couldn't see the wood paneling. You know, unless he's got x-ray vision, he couldn't see underneath the wood paneling because they put that up in like 1974. So I was really kind of disturbed about everything he said. It was like I felt that I had been violated. I felt like he was a CIA spy because he had so much accurate detail. But nothing he had was current as of the day before. If he had just got back from my house, he wouldn't have seen any of that.
Wow.
All right. So, you know, that just gives you an idea of the kind of power that ET has. They transported him back into the past.
Right.
But he had so much detail that I was really shook up about it. And that, then I became very adamant about meeting his little green friends. All right. He said, well, I'll talk to him and see what they say. So, the next day he comes up to me and he goes, today. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, they'll be here to get you right after lunch. Well, our ship knocked off for lunch at 11:30 in the morning, and we went back to work at 1:15 in the afternoon. And about 11:45, around noon, close to that time, he came up to me and said, they're here. And I said, where are you? He said, well, you go up on the main deck, you'll see him. All right, so I walked up under the aft deck there, and sure enough, there was this object. Half a mile, three-quarters of a mile in diameter. It was the biggest thing I ever seen in my life.
Wow.
It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. It was like you had a giant diamond that was the size of, you know, three-quarters of a mile or half a mile in diameter, and you shined a pure white light through it, and you spun it around on its axis, and you were trying to describe all the colors that you've seen, because there was every color of the rainbow, and there were flashes of bright, intense light. It was gorgeous. It was kind of like if you drop a drop of oil in the water, and you see it swirl around a little bit, and you see the rainbow effect.
Right.
You see all the different colors, but you really can't describe which color is where or when because it's all swirling around and stuff. Only this thing was swirling at a magnificent rate, and I was just awestruck by it, and it was just absolutely gorgeous. And there was two people on my ship that were having a conversation over by the rail there, and they were out looking over the water, and out to sea there was not really anything to look at except the sun, the sky, the water. You know, every now and then you'll see an airplane and maybe another ship. But other than that, it's probably pretty much the same thing every day. Horizon and water, where the water line meets the sky.
Right.
Yeah, so, and they were having this conversation, and I was trying to get one of their guys' attention, and I was grabbed him by the shoulder, and I was shaking it as hard as I could, pointing at this object, excitedly yelling, look up, look up, Brooks, look up, look up. And he never did look up. And he acted like I wasn't even there, blank. Because just that fast. All of a sudden, I'm looking down. I see myself on the ship, shaking this guy's arm, pointing towards where I'm looking at from. And I see my ship pulling away in the water. And I can tell that I'm on this other ship, and not the ship that's in the water. And I can see that I'm still on the ship in the water. So here's what I had to deal with. In about 3 seconds' time, here's the comprehension that I came up with. My first thought was, my God, I'm AWOL. And as soon as I thought that, a voice came in my head and said, no, they don't even know you're gone. And then my second thought was, my God, this isn't happening. And then another voice, not the same as the first, but a different one, came in my head and said, yes, it is. It's what you wanted. And my third thought was, I'm in two places at once. Now, I can't explain it. I don't know how it was done. But that just gives you an idea of the technology that we're dealing with the ET.
Yeah, if they can travel through time, I guess they
can
do it.
And it was in the blink of an eye. All right? And that's when I realized that I was going to be in for an adventure. I remember I was standing on a metal grate. The object appeared a lot smaller on the inside than it looked to be from the outside. When I was inside it, it looked like I was in an object that was circular in shape, and it was maybe 30 to 60 feet in diameter, all right? Not much bigger than that. But when I saw it from my ship out there, it looked humongous. Now, my ship was 528 feet long, which is exactly one-tenth of a mile. And I know this object that I was looking at was 2, 3, 4 times as big as my ship. And it was round. And like I said, it was somewhere between a half a mile and 3/4 of a mile in diameter. It was humongous.
Wow.
All right, so then I had to pinch my arm. I pinched my arm to make sure that I wasn't dreaming. And I remember making it bleed, so I could look at it later and tell myself that it wasn't all a nightmare or a dream. Blink. Just like that. We went from being on that side of the world, like I said, we were 2 or 3 days, 4 days out of Korea or Japan or whatever on that side of the world. We're hovering right down the Court Street and Schuyler Avenue, which is the intersection or the main intersection in the town where I'm from. I'm from originally a place called Kankakee, Illinois. And we're right outside of City National Bank, which is a building that's about 6 feet tall on the corner. And we're about the level of the fifth floor. And we're right in the middle of the intersection. And I'm looking right through the walls of the spaceship, right through the walls of City National Bank building. I can see the steel I-beams. I can feel the copper lines and the water lines and the electrical conduits and all of this. And I can see through the walls, through 5 or 6 rooms deep. And I can see everything that was in between the walls, the studs, everything. And I can see my father sitting at his desk. And somebody came in. And then my father got up, shook hands with him. The man sat down, my father sat back, now blank. Now we're hovering over
now, now what age did your father look? Was it in the past or the...
It looked like it was present day.
Okay.
I mean, at the time, at about what my father looked like at that age. I mean, at the time that it happened.
Okay.
It wasn't like he was 10 years younger or anything like that. He looked to be about the same age.
All right.
But I also know this, on that time in the time zone in that world, when it's 11 o'clock in the morning, it's like, you know, midnight here, 1 o'clock in the morning here.
Right.
So I know that, you know, it was broad daylight, and, you know, the bakery's hours are 9 to 5, you know, so.
It's hard to explain.
Yes, it is. All right. But the fact is that they took me there, right? Blink. Now we're over at Grace Baptist Academy. Now, this is where my mother taught. She taught at a Christian school. She was teaching first grade. I'm looking right through the roof of the school. I can see the support structure that's holding up the roof, the eaves or whatever you want to call that, those things that, you know, that are up in the attic, you know, that holds up. Okay, only they were steel. All right. I could see wiring going through there. I could see right through the roof of that. I could see underneath that. I could see right through the other roof down into my mother's room. And I could see my mother writing a sentence up on the blackboard and all of her students sitting on her desk with her hands folded, just paying attention and watching her writing that sentence. Blink.
You remember what the sentence was?
The only thing I remember is part of it was, "This continent was white as snow." I remember reading that. All right? But you got to realize that all of this that I was trying to take in, and I was only seeing glimpses that were maybe 5-10 seconds long. Because all of this that I'm describing took place in the first minute.
And were they talking to you at all? And you hadn't seen the ETs at this point, but were you?
No, I hadn't seen them. No, they weren't discussing anything with me at the time. They were just more like, you know, they were revealing things to me that they wanted me to see.
Okay.
And I was still kind of like in shock trying to deal with what I was trying to deal with. You know, you got to realize this is all overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, number one, you know, how do they know who my parents were? Number two, how do they even know where they worked? You know, how do they know so much about me and my life and my family? You know, that's one thing that I was trying to do with at this moment.
All right. Well, that's
okay. And then, all right, and then right after that, blink, like I said, and now we're going along, and I'm looking down, and I'm looking right through the floor now, and I can see right through it. Now, it's like I had tunnel vision. I could see the outside edges, all right? It's kind of like a big oval, and I'm, like, looking through, okay? And I could see through my peripheral vision that it's solid on either side of me. But if I turn my head, no matter which way I turn my head, I could still see right through everything, and then it was solid where I was looking at before if I made that my peripheral vision. Now, I don't know how they could do that, but obviously it was something they were able to wire into my brain so that I could see all of this. All right. So.
Right. They're pretty advanced.
And then I'm looking through the floor, and it looks like, to me, it looked like an island that was all sand, and it looked like it had been bombed. Bomb craters everywhere. You know, it looked like a bombing run in Vietnam after they got done doing a B-52 run over, and then flying over and taking pictures of it. Because it looked like a whole bunch of bomb craters. And I remember thinking to myself, man, this looks like the surface of the moon. And about that time, we came up over a ridge. And I saw planet Earth laid out in front of me. And I saw the north and south continent. And I seen it spinning on its axis. And I realized that it was the moon. And
wow.
We just come up on the dark side of it. And all of this was blink, blink, blink. You know, and it was, like I said, in less than a minute. Now, it took our astronauts 3.5-4 days to get there, 3.5-4 days to get back. You know, I sure as heck didn't know I was going to make a trip to the moon and back in less than a minute. Never in my wildest dreams.
Right.
And it was at this time is when I clenched my butt cheeks together and told myself not to crap my pants. I told myself, don't.
Right.
And then I started thinking all kinds of questions. And then as soon as I started thinking them, they started answering them. And the first thing I said, "Where are you from?" And instantly, it was like I was standing in the middle of a 3D light star chart. It was all these little lights all around me, and it was just like I was standing in the middle of the universe. All right, and they all came on, and I noticed our solar system. And it was just like a 3D model of the solar system, and it was hanging right off to my side, off to the right a little bit. But I recognized our planets and the moon going around the Earth, and I could see all our planets and everything. And I knew it was our solar system. And all I say, in the space that I was looking at it, you know, our solar system might have taken up about 5 feet of space, 6 feet of space. And I was looking at this whole thing was from one side of the ship to the other, so, you know, and I could tell that our little solar system was insignificant, really, compared to the size of the 3D chart that I was looking at. And they asked me if I saw the red flashing light at the end, at the other far end, and I said, yes, I did. And they told me that that's where they were from. They pronounced the name of their planet, but I couldn't even begin to pronounce it because, the language that they speak isn't quite the same as ours, and I didn't even understand what they said. To me, it sounded like a bunch of gibberish. Anything that they told me in their native tongue sounded like gibberish to me. And what I mean by that would be like, or something like that. and that's not exactly, and I'm not doing it exactly right, but I'm just saying it's like, you know, it didn't make no sense whatsoever. Right. But they told me that they were here, and they had been observing us for years and years and years. They told me they were not to interfere. You're only here to observe. They're not to interfere with our religious beliefs. They're not to interfere with our political beliefs. They're not here to to do anything except observe. Now, that's what this group that I was with told me. All right. Now, I can't say the same about all the other ones.
Now, is this just one voice talking?
No. Well, the one voice was the main voice. Well, kept talking to me. But every now and then, the other ones would answer, too. You know, and I gathered from the answers that were coming in my head, there were three of them. Now, you got to realize, I had never turned around to look at them yet. I was kind of like quivering in my boots.
What did the voices sound like? Were they male?
They sounded like you and me talking. They sounded like normal English when they were talking to me.
Okay.
They told me that like I said, I had all kinds of questions for them. I asked them where they were from. They told me. They showed me on the 3D chart. And then one of the first questions I remember asking them was, is there a God? Because I was brought up religiously, and I wanted to know. And I sensed fear from them when I asked that question. That was the only time I sensed fear from them. And they told me that they were not allowed to answer that question, that they had a higher authority to answer to. Now, you got to realize, I'm thinking to myself by now, that if these beings had made themselves known on this planet Earth, they would have been worshipped and treated as gods, because I could tell their technology was so far above ours. Number one, I can't read anybody's mind, but they were reading every thought of mine, and they could communicate. And I asked them, how they knew English. They told me that they knew every single language and every dialect on our planet. I have no idea how many languages there are on our planet. And I can't speak English very well. You know, I mean, I have a pretty good command of the English language, don't get me wrong, but I couldn't speak French. I couldn't speak Spanish. I don't know any languages other than English. They told me that they know every single one. Which means to me that they can go to Russia and talk to a Russian, and then leave there and go to China and talk to a Chinese person, and then go to Africa. And how many countries are in Africa, you know, on that continent? And how many different languages there are and stuff? And it boggles my mind to think that how many languages there are. I have no idea how many languages there are. But they told me they speak every one of them fluently. They also told me they interact with our government. I asked them that. I said, do you work with our government? They said, yes, we do. We do work with your government. They also told me, I asked them how many other ones that were around besides them. They told me they knew of four other species that are interacting with our government. And not only our government, but the major governments of the world. They interact with all of them. And they're in cooperation or whatever with them.
Did they say what they meant by interact? Is that all they said?
That's all they said. They wouldn't elaborate any further. I asked them, they told me they just told me that they are working with our government. So.
Now, at this point, as they're asking all these questions, what are you looking at? Are you just looking outside or
at this point. Yeah, that's a good question, Preston. At this point, I'm seeing all kinds of things being flashed in front of me, like the screen. It's like I'm watching a movie. And I'm seeing earthquakes, and I'm seeing volcanoes erupting, and I'm seeing wars and wars and wars, and I'm seeing all kinds of, like, hurricanes and, tornadoes and basically a lot of destruction going on. Forest fires, things like this.
Right.
All right? And I don't understand why they're showing me all of this. Okay. I didn't really ask them. All right. Now, I did see they took me over to my old house where I grew up at, which I said my family wasn't living at anymore. I saw myself coming out of the front door and walking across the street to my grandmother's house, who lived across the street from us at the time, and talking to her. I looked like I was about 10, maybe 11 years old. I could have been 12. But I knew I was a lot younger then. And I walked down the street, walked down the corner, and I turned the corner, and I went into a little grocery store that was over in the corner there. And then right after that, it was back to being, you know, watching the things that they were showing me, all these different things.
Wow.
It probably took me about half an hour to 45 minutes to finally get the courage up to turn around and look at them.
Did you
asked them if they were going to eat me, and because I didn't know, after they took me to the other side of the moon that quick, I just figured they wanted to take me anywhere, they were going to do it, and I was powerless to do anything about it, and I kind of felt like a rat trapped in a maze, you know, because I felt like I had nowhere to run, nowhere to escape to, and even if I wanted to escape, they would know what my plans were because they were reading my mind.
Right.
So,
now you asked them about, or they said something about the atomic bomb explosions?
They told me that when we tested the atomic bomb in 1945, that it started a clock running. I don't know what kind of clock. I don't know if it's a doomsday clock. I don't know what it's supposed to be. The signal towards the end, towards where Armageddon is going to be or what it was, they wouldn't elaborate, but they told me that basically it was like a signal to them. And that's when they started observing this and things like that, you know. And, you know, UFOs have been around for years and centuries and all of that. They really hadn't been on that prominent up until, like, 1947. You know, when the Roswell incident supposedly happened and all of that. And that's when they really took on a big boon. So, I don't know what the significance of that was. Personally, I feel that they might be evil. They did not tell me that God existed. They did not deny his existence. They told me they could not answer it. They told me they had a higher authority they had to answer to. And like I said, I felt they were highly intelligent themselves. So, I don't know who if they're good, they're bad, or what.
Well, they also mentioned something about your parents, right, being honorable people, good people.
Yeah. Well, they said something about my parents were good people or good set of parents or. Or respectable people, or something like that. I can't remember what it was exactly that they said, for sure, you know, but it was like, my father was an honorable man. I remember him saying something like that. My father was an honorable man, you know. So, now, I heard or read somewhere a long time ago that supposedly when you die and you get to heaven and you stand in front of God on Judgment Day, he's going to be showing you a movie of your life. And I felt like I was watching part of a movie of my life at the time this was going on. So I don't know whether they are from God or if they're from the devil or what. I don't know where they're from. They told me the name of their planet. And they told me the name of the galaxy they're from. They're not even from our... They told me the name of the solar system they live in. Like I said, I couldn't begin to pronounce it. And I do believe it's in our own galaxy. But it's further away. But as huge as our galaxy is, it wouldn't matter.
Right.
You know, I know this. There's nobody going to be going out there real soon, you know, building a spaceship and going anywhere near where they live. You know what I mean? Look what we've come from in the 60s to where we are today. You know, and we got a space station that circles the Earth, what, 23,000 miles up? You know, the furthest out in space we've been to is the moon, which is like basically jumping off the back porch and walking down the sidewalk for the first time, you know, compared to the fathomness of space.
Right.
We haven't gone anywhere, really. You know, as far as I'm concerned, the moon's in our own backyard.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
Now, like I said, they told me there was four other species that they were aware of besides themselves. And they told me they all interact with the government.
Did they say what kind of species?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I'm sure. I think they said there was one that was orange. And then they did say the grays, the typical grays that most people see. You know, the ones that are between 4 and 5 feet tall with the almond-shaped eyes.
Right.
Now, when I did finally get the nerve up to turn around and see them, I was downright shocked. Because I asked them. I remember asking them in my mind, what do you look like? And the first thing they said was, we're not little and we're not green, which went back to when I told my friend I wanted to meet my little green friends.
Right.
Okay? Well, they did tell me that. So, obviously, they were looking in on that conversation at the time. And I remember when I asked them if they were going to eat me, they told me I watched too many horror movies. Well, actually, I haven't seen that many horror movies in my life. However,
they have a sense of humor.
Yes, it seemed to me they did have a sense of humor to a point. But, no, they said they weren't going to eat me. They did. They said they eat. But the food that they eat is nothing like the food that we eat.
Okay.
So, I don't know if they eat vegetables or if they eat, like, seaweed. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. You know, they didn't offer me any snacks, and I didn't ask for any. And when I finally got the nerve up to turn around and look at them, which I said was about 30, 45 minutes later, I think I realize all this time I'm seeing all this stuff they're showing me, all these different things. And there's things of my old life, my parents and my grandparents and things like that with me and my kids, my brothers and sisters and stuff. I mean, it was like little family things that we were doing, just little snapshots that were, it was like I was sitting and watching a slideshow on fast forward.
Wow.
But then I do remember they showed me, I remember one thing that I saw was, and I remember, I believe it was the last thing that I saw was, I was on a motorcycle, and I got hit broadside, and I was laying on the ground, and I thought I was dead. I wasn't moving. I looked like I was unconscious or dead. And I thought to myself that they had done a cool trick, played a cool trick on me, and showed me how I had died. And that's what I really seriously thought. And I thought that up until 2003 when I got a 100th anniversary Harley Davidson Sportster and had it 2 weeks and got run over, or got smacked by a guy who made a U-turn and knocked me over, and it knocked me out. And I realized that that's what I'd seen. But when I came to, my left lower leg was shattered. I had to have surgery the next day. I had a metal plate and 11 screws in my leg. And it took me 22 months for my bones to heal. And I was on crutches for another year. And I've been on crutches for a year right around Memorial Day, which is just like a year and a month now, 2 months. And I'm doing okay. So they just showed me, that was the last thing I remember them showing me. And I always thought in the back of my mind from that day forward, you gotta realize this is from 1982 up until the time that this happened. And when I got a chance to get that bike, I didn't run out and buy it right away because I kind of had this feeling that I was going to get in a serious accident with it.
Right.
But God works in strange ways. My sister-in-law offered to buy it for me and give me a payment plan that was too good a deal to pass up. And I had always wanted a 100th anniversary Harley. and I wanted to wait till the 100th anniversary to get one. And so, and the moment I walked into the showroom and I saw that bike, I knew then and there I was destined to have some kind of a fateful encounter with it. Little did I know it was going to be 2 weeks after I got it.
Wow.
But that's the case. And the bike is sitting in the garage in Illinois, and I'm going to go back home and get it next year, and I'm going to drive it back out here to California because I'm to the point where I can walk well enough that I can ride the bike again. It hasn't put me off from riding. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about my UFO experience. So, but that was the last thing that I remember them showing me. I love everything that I've seen.
Okay.
When I saw them, like I said, they were, when I turned around, first of all, they were as white can be. You can take the cleanest white sheet, and I don't even think we've been white enough. And they were between 12 and 15 feet tall. And I'm a pretty good judge of height. And the reason is I know that, you know, I can reach my hand up over my head. And I can jump up and touch the rim of a basketball backboard, the rim, and that's right around 10 feet, right above the ground.
Right.
And these guys that have been standing up got 2.5, 3 feet, 4 feet over the top of it, looking down on it. You know, they could be center on any basketball team. You pass them the ball, they get the ball, and they could just drop it over your head. And as high as you could jump, you wouldn't have been able to get the ball. Now, them putting their hands above their head with it. They were huge. And they had big, praying mantis type faces. Great big black triangular eyes. And they had what looked like a proboscis. Protruding from where the mouth area was. And I just remember seeing like two little holes for the nostrils. I don't remember seeing any shape of a nose. And I know they weren't wearing uniforms or anything because their skin was skin tight. And I'm pretty sure that they were naked. And I don't remember seeing any sexual organs. They had long, skinny arms. And I remember their hands. I moved around a little bit by now. I was, like I said, when I first got on, I felt like I was in a corner of the ship down there. And I remember a metal grate. I remember seeing that. And it looked like there was steam or something coming up from the bottom of it. And then I kind of backed up a little bit from them because it was like I was taken aback, you know, because it was like I expected to see the grays. I expected to see something more familiar to what I expected an ET to look like. I didn't expect to see a praying mantis standing over me.
Right.
Reading my mind, you know.
Were they talking at this point?
I don't know if I was still asking them questions or not. I mean, I might have been in shock at the time there and not remember. I don't really remember that. But I do remember one of them came down, and I backed up against the console. And I remember the console. And it was, I heard you say it earlier about how these primitive computers and stuff look. The console that I was up against looked like something out of a 1950s science fiction movie. It had, like, what appeared to be 3 or 4 old-fashioned cathode ray tube screens and maybe about 4 or 5 rows of dials. And 4 or 5 rows of lights, and like 4 or 5 rows of toggle switches, and that was basically it.
Right, this is exactly what other people have described to me. Very primitive looking.
I'm sorry?
Other people have described the same type of thing to me, as you heard, yeah.
Yeah, it looked like something out of a 1950s science fiction set. I remember the dials on there looked like oven dials, you know, like you use to turn the oven on and off on your stove. All right, they were like that with the knobs that had the little protrusion in the middle that stick up.
Right.
Okay. And I remember one of them came down and he put his hand on one of the dials. And I noticed his fingers, if you want to call them fingers, they had 3 of them. And it would be like if you take your index finger and your thumb and you spread it as far apart as you can, and then you were to fill all of that in nice and solid between the two, and then you do the same thing between your ring finger and your little finger, spread it apart as you could, and fill all that in. And just make it one solid, like join them two fingers together and join your thumb and first finger together.
Right.
You know, and just make them one, like one finger or thumb or whatever you want to call it.
Like
the same thing with the other side. Right. And it was about that size because it was like the one side was really big as far. And I remember when he put his hand together, it made a perfect half circle. And plus a one finger in the middle. But when he put his hand together, it reminded me of a horse's hoof, you know, because it was rounded around the front. And when he put his fingers together, it made a perfect half circle.
Did they have fingernails, did you notice?
I don't remember seeing any fingernails. I don't remember seeing anything that looked like fingernails. It was all solid, and it was maybe an inch and a half thick. It was thick,
huh.
You know, about as thick as your, you know, all right. Comparably speaking, all right, you got to realize these things are bigger than us, so their hands are a little bit bigger than ours. You know, I don't remember seeing any feet. I didn't look at their feet. I couldn't tell you what their feet looked like, if they had any. I didn't look down that far. I was just kind of like, I was just awestruck by looking at them, and I was kind of like scared. I was kind of backing away from them. I remember one of them coming over, and he put his hand on my shoulder. And I turned to run. And next thing I know, I'm fighting. I'm in the bed on my ship. Now, I don't remember going back down to my bed. Right? And I thought to myself, oh, my God, it's been one long nightmare. And I started to get up out of my bed, and my skin, My teeth, my shirt, and my pants were soaked with sweat. I had been, and I was hyperventilating. All right, I don't know if I was like trying to fight them off or what. You know, I'm pretty sure I was, because I really felt they were going to do something to me. All right, but then I was in the bed, and I started to get up. And I got out of my rack, and there's that guy. He's standing there grinning from ear to ear. The same guy who set me up for it. And the first thing he said to me was, "So, tell me about your trip." And I tell you what I did. I walked right past him. I said, "I don't want nothing to do with you no more." I never talked to him. Whenever I saw him after that, I would go out of my way to walk away from him. Now I regret the fact that I never talked to him later on. You know, but at the time, I didn't want nothing to do. I thought myself, I really did, because I'd known this guy for about 4.5, 5 years, or close to 4 years anyway. And we had gone out on Liberty a lot. We had done a lot of things together and stuff. And said that for him to do this to me, you know, I didn't want nothing to do with him. I thought he was one of them in disguise. I really seriously did.
Wow.
All right. And to this day, I still wouldn't be surprised if he was. Because he told me he goes with them all the time. Or he did tell me that at the time. And you know what? I believe him. I seriously do.
Well, he said he went to their planet, right?
Yes, he said that he'd been to several different planets. And that he'd seen a lot of interesting things. But you know, this is before my experience. And of course, I'm taking it all with a grain of salt. Because it's like, you know, when's the last time anybody came up and offered you a ride on a flying saucer? You know what? It's not an everyday occurrence. You know, I do know this. Be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it.
Right.
Well. And I will say this. This has been a life-altering experience. I feel that I am closer to God now because of this. Because a lot of people say that God isn't real and doesn't exist. Well, they say the same thing about E.T. And I know different than that. And I don't care what anybody says. And you can call me crazy or whatever. It don't matter to me one way or the other. I feel people have a right to know the truth. I know that our government is lying to them about the truth because E.T. told me they interact with the government. So I know that they're not telling, you know, and there's more to what's going on than what the government will say. Now, I don't know what the government's got going on with them or not. I'm sure they're getting technology from them. I'm sure they are. And I really think it's interesting that we've had all this wonderful things happen, and all this has basically come about since the 1950s, and I'm talking about lasers, fiber optics, you know, satellite communications and all of that. And I'm sure a lot of that, the microchip, you know, even microwave ovens and all that, I'm sure a lot of that technology came down from them. Could have been recovered from the crash from Roswell, for all I know.
Wow.
And of course, I'm not on the inside to know the real facts, but I can only speculate. But, you know, I think it's pretty interesting that it took man, what, 5,000 years to be able to fly, to get off the ground, and then only took us 70 years to go from being able to fly to walking on the moon. So, you know, in the history of life on this planet, you know, our world as far as flying and stuff goes is still relatively young. We're still in the infant stages of it, all right? And these people, if you want to call them people, are far more advanced than we are, that's for sure. And whatever they can do with their ships. Now, I don't remember feeling any motion like we were moving. But yet, I know for a fact that we were moving. Or it sure seemed to me that we were doing a lot of moving. You know, but I don't, you know, it's like when you're in an airplane and you're flying along and you get up and you walk down the aisle, you can kind of feel that you're still flying.
Right,
you know,
right, sure.
You can feel the, I don't want to say gravitational pull, it's just the pressure and all of that. I didn't feel that way in this spaceship. I felt the same way as if I was on land, walking around on land. And I didn't have the sensation that we were moving. And I'm sure that we were moving quite fast whenever we were moving. I don't think we were staying over my ship, hovering over the top of my ship. They also told me that they have cloaking ability. They can cloak themselves so that nobody can see them. They can also, if there's a group of people, they can also reveal themselves to certain people in the group. If there's a group of 10 people and they only want 5 people to see them, there's only going to be 5 people that see them. And the other 5 people are not going to see what they're looking at.
Right. Well, that explains how you were the only one who saw this thing hovering over a ship filled with, what, 150 men?
Well, there were 2 guys that I was aware of that were standing right there. And like I said, they didn't even respond to me shaking the wand, you know, so... Right, but they did tell me they had the cloaking ability and that they can be selective about who they have see them. And they say this is part of their plan because it adds to the confusion of what's going on. Because there has been several times when a group of people have been there and certain number of people in the group have seen them and the other people don't. They have that ability to do that. So I don't know if they tune into a certain wavelength on... And the metal receptors or what, you know, but, you know.
So you don't want to have another encounter with these guys, or you do?
I'm sorry?
Would you want to have another encounter with these guys?
No. Not particularly, right? My curiosity has been satisfied. You know, I've only wanted to meet them once, you know. Would I just meet a different species? Well, I don't know about that, because I don't know what all the other species are like, and what kind of things they do to people, and I hear about some of these bizarre experiments they do and stuff. Now, I myself may have had medical experiment done on me that I'm not even aware of, because it was like, there are certain things about this trip that I remember every detail down to the nth. You know, it's like I remember where I was when John Kennedy got assassinated, you know, and then, like I said, this thing has had a profound impact on my life, because I experienced it myself. All right, there's certain things about it I remember, like, I would never forget. And there's certain things about this adventure I don't remember at all. All right, and I don't understand why. As a matter of fact, after my adventure, it was like pretty much put out of my mind. And it wasn't until maybe about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years later, something happened, it just triggered it, and it just came all running back to me. And I remembered a lot of it back then. And you got to realize, this is 2007, this happened in 82, so we're talking something that happened over 25 years ago.
Wow. Very interesting. Very, very interesting encounter. Not the type of encounter that I hear a lot about, though I've heard a lot of you know, different types. Not all people report being examined. I've heard a lot of...
Well, you know, Preston, I've read a couple of your books. And there was one book that you had where with all these different encounters these people had.
Right.
All right, and there was all kinds of different, you know, there's a lot of similarities between some of them, and there's a lot of dissimilarities between them, you know. And I noticed that out of some of the stories that I was reading, it was like bits and pieces of mine, you know. I mean, it was like...
I know exactly what you mean.
Maybe there's like a dozen stories that I read in that one book, okay? And maybe out of about 8 or 9 of them, there were certain things that certain people experienced with some of those that kind of are similar to what I experienced. But not everything in every one of them encounters is what I experienced. Okay, like for instance, one of them reading my mind, you know. And I've seen a couple of your stories where some of the people had their minds being read. All right, but not everybody had their minds being read.
Right, right. Each encounter is different, but there's certainly a lot of similarities.
Yes, and there were little, like I said, bits and pieces from a lot of your stories. You know, you could throw them together to be in mind, you know. But, you know, and I know that everybody's encounter is unique, you know. And not every two people is going to have the same type of encounter. I really believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I feel that my encounter was tailor-made to me, because like I said, you know, they were showing me things in my past. They were showing me in my life and stuff. And I still don't understand the significance of all of that. I really don't.
Wow. That's an amazing story. But you know what? Our hour is actually up. So.
Already?
Yep.
So no phone calls, huh?
No, we didn't get any callers tonight, though. That's all right. The story is actually going to be archived, so people can listen to it. You know. But I want to thank you, Kevin, for coming on to the show.
No, I appreciate you having me tonight, sir.
It's a very interesting story. You were a great guest. And I want to thank you very much for going public.
And, no, I've got nothing to hide.
I'm very thankful about it, and I guess that's our show for tonight. So I want to thank you all for listening. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett. Our guest tonight has been Kevin Kamen, and he's been talking about his experiences with a very large, actually a 12 to 15 foot tall, praying mantis type ETs. So I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope you can join us next week. Our guest will be Lily Rose, and she's going to be talking about psychic healing. Until then, keep your eyes to the skies.